Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle. Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing, online marketing, social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps. I am uber excited today. I have a great guest. His name is Bill Gertine, and he's with a company called the 800-Pound Gorilla. Ooh, scary. But before you think we're going ape, don't go bananas. Because we're going to be talking about voices, especially the voices inside your head. Hey, Bill, how you doing, man?
Brian, I'm great. Great to see you this morning.
Awesome, dude. Well, anyways, I saw you give this presentation, and it really blew me away. And I think we're going to have fun talking about it today. So what I like to do is get people to know your backstory. So I know you worked at a radio station at 18 years old, getting inside of people's heads with your voice. But now you talk about how to get inside of your own head and deal with those voices. So how did that come about?
Well, there's a long, circuitous route that got to that point. But I did start in radio, you're right. And I was fortunate enough to kind of have the pipes to do that. And so I was on very young. I did figure out where the money was fairly soon. And it was not on the air. It was on the broadcast sales side. And so I stayed there for a good long time. And I started training salespeople. And about 15 years ago, decided to strike out on my own as a sales trainer. And I picked a very specific niche. And the niche was to the ticket sales departments of professional sports teams. And so I have had the good fortune of having my systems in place at over 100 different teams now throughout the US, Canada, and Mexico. And throughout that whole journey, I saw people doing really well with the training I had, but then there were some others that I thought had great promise that just fell off and just weren't able to make it work. And I started studying them. I said, you know, what is it about them that disallows them from the success that they deserve or have the talent to be able to achieve? And so I started kind of looking at all the data that I had, and it became apparent that there were several different things going on inside them, mostly inside their heads, that prevented them from succeeding. And from that 15-year experience of watching people perform, doing well and doing poorly, I created this keynote that you saw called The Seven Voices in Your Head.
Now, I know inside of my head there's more than seven voices, but for my audience's sake, why don't we go ahead and give them the list of the seven you're going to cover, and then later on we'll kind of dig into how each one of those affects you during sales or whatever.
We can absolutely do that. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a salesperson, but certainly there, this is what I observed in doing that. And certainly through the pandemic, Brian, we have had more negative voices inside people's heads at any other time in human history. In fact, employees and families are more stressed than ever. Mental health is a big, big deal, and it's costing people relationships, their jobs, sometimes their family, maybe their health. It has been absolutely proven that the people who are better equipped mentally to fend off disease do a better job of that. So if you can get the voices out of your head, you can actually prevent yourself from COVID-19. So I do have seven voices that I have identified. And the first one, and most of you are going to recognize these yourself in your own life, is the voice of comparison, where you're always looking over the fence at someone else's life and saying, gosh, I wish I had what she had, or I wish I had the job he had, or gosh, the relationship that they have is just something that I've never been able to achieve. How do they do that? And you become very jealous of what's going on. It can sometimes consume you. The worst place this happens, Brian, do you have an idea where the worst place this happens?
In church.
That's one of them. You're absolutely right. The one that's more ubiquitous, though, that everyone can probably relate to here is social media.
Definitely.
Where it's more like Fakebook than Facebook. And you look at people's lives and you know some of them on there and you say, I know who these people are. I know their life. It is not like this. And so there is this constant comparison that people want to use for themselves. And so it's one of those that In the presentation, we talk about ways in which to be able to tamp that down and to actually turn that into something that can be a positive.
Now, in the internet marketing world, you see these pictures of these guys with a Lamborghini standing in front of a mansion, and you know for a fact it's not his. He's borrowing that from a friend because the dude's broke, you know?
Yeah, his Prius is next door at the neighbor's house.
Oh, dude, and it's no Prius. It's probably a rusted out Acura, something like that. You know what I mean?
So the comparison gene is just everywhere. And it does eat into our brains and really get into the point where we can't move forward. And through the presentation, we talk about ways in which to be able to change that voice into something that can be positive. The second one is regret. And the voice of regret really shows up in several different ways. It can show up either as, I wish I hadn't done a certain thing, or I wish I had done a certain thing. And what's fascinating about regret is that most of the studies that have been done about how regret affects us is that we've regretted far more about what we haven't done in life than what we have done. So when you think about relationships and school, in fact, school is the number one, education is the number one thing people regret. 32% of people who have talks about regrets or have thoughts about regret have something to do with education. I wish I'd have gone to school, or I wish I wouldn't have dropped out, or I wish I'd have taken a different major, something like that. And what's fascinating about that is that you can actually change that. You can actually go back to school if you choose to. And so rather than let regret eat you alive, there are ways in which that it can actually help you fuel you forward, knowing that not many things that you haven't done are irreversible.
So are these the kind of things where people shit all over themselves?
You enjoyed that line.
I did, man. Okay, let's save that one for later. So let's jump in. What is number three?
Three is inadequacy. And this is where the individual just feels as though they don't measure up. And this may be the strongest one right now in COVID-19 times with managers and people that have been thrust into leadership positions that really don't feel as though they have the kind of leadership qualities that are necessary right now. It's called imposter syndrome, where people are deathly afraid that they're going to be found out, that they're really not good managers and that they really don't know what they're doing, but they're still in charge. And so it becomes a very eating from the inside sort of feeling. And if those who are listening today have had that and they've been at work thinking, oh my gosh, what do I do now? And really don't know what to do now, you probably have felt that imposter syndrome coming through. And when we talk a little bit more about where that comes in and how to overcome that as well.
And that kind of happens a lot in the sales business. For example, a lot of companies will promote their best salesperson to be sales manager. Now, just because you're a good salesperson doesn't necessarily make you a good people person, right?
It's an entirely different set of skills to be able to lead others versus do really well in sales. And often what ends up happening is those managers you're talking about try to find clones of themselves and teach them how they did it, when it's really best for managers to look and see how others will succeed on their own merits using their own skills and adapting some of those to suit them and in the way in which they sell. It's very dangerous for a manager who is the best salesperson to come in and say, okay, you all are now going to sell like I sell, because not everyone is going to succeed in the same way.
Absolutely. And, you know, people learn differently, they think differently, communicate differently. And I think in the case of a business owner, it's kind of the same thing. They have to learn to be able to adapt to know their strengths, you know, adjust to their weaknesses and hire people to fill those.
Right.
And I think the key is making sure that you are the best leader as possible.
And almost be willing to say that you are giving up some of the authority or the power you have in order to let others grow and mature and achieve what it is they need to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're promoted to a manager, at some point, when you were a subordinate, you screwed up somewhere and you learned something from that. And when you become a manager, you have to allow those below you to have that ability to screw up and to learn from it. And if we don't do that often enough, we end up with either clones of ourselves that don't work out very well, Or you have people that just really get frustrated and leave, and then you have no one underneath you to even lead.
So in the sports world, I know that the teams are competitive, but are the sports salespeople as competitive?
It's even more so, I believe. It's fascinating because many of the people who are hired into these ticket sales positions in sports are former D1 athletes, people who have been terrific volleyball players or on the rowing team or lacrosse or whatever you happen to be in at that time. And so these are people that are very driven to succeed. In fact, it's one of the things that draws them to sports, and what draws managers to those athletes is that they're ultra competitive. And so when they get into this position and they find out that they're making 100 to 120 calls a day, reaching maybe 8 or 10 individuals, maybe having 6 good conversations, perhaps with 1 sale, which is a good day, actually, and you make that, it feels a whole lot like failure to D1 athletes that have been conditioned to win each and every day. And it's one of the things that we work through with regard to this inadequacy voice, because what you need to focus on is not necessarily being number 1, but perhaps going up 1 on the leaderboard. If you're number 5 right now, what do we need to do to get to number 4 and so on?
Right. And in baseball, for example, you can fail 70% of the time. If you hit 300, you're considered a success. In sales, if you can close 5%, you're doing awesome.
That's right. And we end up in sales practicing on our people that we're trying to sell. You know, in athletics, you know, you spend 90%+ of your time in the gym or performing, practicing before you actually get out onto the field. And you spend less than 10% of your time actually in competition. We in sales do exactly the opposite. We train maybe 5 or 10% of the time if we're lucky, and we're spending 90% of the time failing and screwing up with the customers that we ought to be doing our best job with. And so it's really something that I understand can fuel this inadequacy portion of our voices in our heads, but it needs to be overcome because we need to understand that we are better than what we're giving ourselves credit for.
Right on. So let's jump to number 4. What's that?
You bet. 4 is genetics. This is the feeling that I was born this way and I will never be a successful blank. If you believe that your parents were teachers and that's what you are destined to become and that's all you'll ever become, that can become a self-limiting belief and a voice inside your head that may not allow you to achieve that which you have been destined to become beyond a teacher, perhaps. Just because your genes tell you or the 23 chromosomes tell you that this is what you're best at doing doesn't mean that that's what you're predisposed to doing the rest of your life.
Right. And to kind of build on that point, you know, I never thought of myself as a teacher. My dad was a teacher. But one of the things that I have a problem with is reading and writing. I've got DDA. It's like ADD and dyslexia. That's what I call it. I'm not diagnosed that way. But one of the things I learned to do is I've written 5 books and I write them by speaking. And so that way I can complete these books a heck of a lot easier. I don't have to sit there and type and do that kind of stuff.
That's really smart, Brian. And I think many people, what end up happening is they sigh and they say, oh, I'll never be good at this. And then they choose not to do that because they've been programmed throughout growing up that they are never going to be good at a certain thing. It also takes root in certain other ways when we get not only to a career, but in relationships. Oh, my dad, you know, they divorced, and so I'm destined to be divorced too. And you cannot allow your past to determine what your future will be. Even if you're predisposed genetically to be a certain way, it doesn't mean that it's absolutely in stone going to happen.
Right. And in one of my past podcasts, we talked about everybody telling themselves the F word. So let's clear that out of their brain.
That's okay? A great idea. 5 is failure. And it certainly overlaps into many of the others. But it's that, you know, that thing that happened to you when you were in 5th grade, that ballet recital where you fell on the stage, or, you know, those things that follow you for the rest of your life that you feel as though you've screwed up. Maybe it's a relationship that went south because of something you did or said, or maybe it's a job that you could have had you only applied for it, or you somehow you screwed up the number 1 client that someone had and you got fired because of it, or something to that extent, that it's been gnawing at you your entire life and it's dictated how things things have gone for you from then on. And we talk about that voice that can be extremely powerful and how to tamp it down to just a little bit more and allow perhaps a more positive voice to come through.
Right. So the last book I wrote was at the beginning of the year, and it was just at the beginning of the toilet paper shortage. I actually thought about it before it happened. It's called Toilet Paper Math. But now it's happening again.
Indeed.
And I think the toilet paper can help us clean up number six, right? Clean up aisle number six. So let's cover that one.
Well, this one is number six is guilt. And indeed, that's where we said, I should have done this. I should have done that. We're shooting all over ourselves. There is something called the cycle of guilt that we talk about. And it has to do with having something that needs to be done, but you choose not to do it. You just choose to think about it. For example, if you have an angry customer, if you happen to be in customer service and someone is really angry at you and they have left a message on your voicemail, call me immediately. You have this, what's called action slash inaction phase, where you know you're going to be in trouble. If you call them, you're going to get chewed out, but your boss is going to chew you out if you don't. And so you don't want to face either of those. And so you decide instead to do nothing, kind of hide in your shell. And hopefully some of it will just kind of go away. And what ends up happening is because of your inaction, the cycle of guilt continues around and around. And many of us have done this in certain instances, not necessarily at work, but in other places.
Yeah, I can relate to that, man. I was born and raised in New York and Catholic. And my joke is my mother was a travel agent for guilt trips. So... So let's move on to number seven. What do we need to know about that voice?
This is the most tender one and sometimes the most difficult to explain, and it's heartbreak. And the challenge is, of course, it's a very sensitive topic. It may be something of a loss of a loved one or something that's happening even now where heartbreak has been just exacerbated throughout the country, not only for not being able to get together for the holidays and for other things, but for the loss of life and the kinds of things that can take place and just stall someone's life almost as though time stands still. And the voice in your head is as though something should have happened, that you should have done something differently, that your loss is so deep that it cannot be overcome. In fact, what they've seen in hospitals is that now they have actually said that there is such a thing as dying of a broken heart. For many years, cardiologists and health professionals would not say that was the case, that it was all physiological, but they are now seeing a connection. In fact, up to 10% of heart attacks that are brought into a hospital are actually suffering something other than that of a broken heart. If someone has had something very traumatic happen to them, the heart muscle actually changes shape and can actually be misdiagnosed as a heart attack. And so a percentage of those are brought in with a heart attack are actually suffering what they call broken heart syndrome.
Wow. Well, with having seven voices, I'm assuming they don't all speak at the same time. And yeah. I'm also guessing that there's something that you can talk about that will help us kind of get our arms around maybe calming ourselves or making it easier to deal with that.
Well, one of the things that we talk about quite a bit is remembering to breathe. And it may sound like a very, very, very minimal sort of way in which to cope. But if you breathe in for 5 seconds, and you hold it for 5 seconds and then let it out that for that 5 or 6 seconds and do that 3 or 4 times, it can actually help to quell and calm the muscles that are really tensing up and are causing some of the frustration and the anxiety that's going on. Beyond that, it's understanding that more people are feeling this than you know, and that you are not alone, and that you do have help available to you. Many employers have the opportunity for you to take advantage of the benefits, and one of those benefits may very well be an opportunity to talk to someone about how you're feeling. And so you may wish to look into those who are listening right now that may wish to have that opportunity to perhaps to talk to a professional, check your health program that you have at work and see if there's not an opportunity for you to have some of those visits, televisits now with the COVID crisis, but talking to someone about those feelings and seeing that there's not something that you might be able to do to be able to turn those around.
Right. So you brought up two key points. And yes. The first one is slow down. calm down, meditate.
Indeed.
And then the second one is that even pro athletes have multiple coaches, right? I mean, a quarterback's coach may have a footwork coach,
that's right,
may have a throwing coach, you know. There's nothing saying that you can't ask for help. It doesn't make you weak. It makes you strong trying to ask somebody else to, you know, make you better. So,
and to that point, you have seen athletes over the last few years admit their mental health challenges and even retire in some cases. Andrew Luck, for those who know football, the NFL, Andrew Luck was a very highly paid, very highly touted quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, and decided last year that he had had too much mental strain and has decided to give it up because he knew that it was causing a problem not only for his family, but for himself and everyone around him. And up until just recently, having this sort of mental anguish going on and admitting it was some sort of a sign of weakness. And we're seeing now, thankfully, that people are recognizing that it's okay to say, I'm not okay. And indeed, there are opportunities and charities and ways in which that you can reach out that never existed before that can help. And we want to be able to bring those to light for people and to let them know that it really is okay to say, I'm hearing these things and it's not working out, and to be able to reach out to those without feeling weak.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, this was awesome. And I suggest everybody go back and listen to these again, write them down, see which ones resonate with you. And if they want to take an assessment or learn more about this and want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is on the website is the www.the7voices.com. It's the number 7, so THE7voices.com. There's a way in which to reach me there. And I'll even reach out because my web, the email is slightly different. My email is bill@the800poundgorilla.com. So THE800POUND gorilla.com.
Awesome. Well, Bill, this has been fantastic, man. Thanks for coming on and dropping some sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps. And I look forward to getting together with you again sometime soon.
Thanks for the opportunity, Brian.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.